Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 242 of the Last Round Podcast, coming off of one of the, one of the best weeks, or at least the last, six days or whatever it's been. Let's just say the last week of boxing, I think we'll remember for a very long time in terms of two significant main event fights on opposite ends of the world. Which was crazy. One in Japan, one in the USA. Obviously, we'll touch on those in a second. But a great week of fights from Las Vegas to Japan and everywhere in between. It was an excellent week for the sport and the sports history. So jumping right back into it, fight reviews. Last Tuesday, July 25th, from the Ariake Arena in Kotoku, Tokyo, Japan. That's a long one. On ESPN Plus, over here in the United States, at least on the West Coast, it was about, maybe 6 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., when the main event started. The monster, Naoya Inoue, remains undefeated at 25-0 with the eighth round TKO over Stephen Fulton, who takes the second loss of his career. The monster, Inoue, is now the WBC and WBO Super Bantamweight Champion of the World. In his debut at 122 pounds against the number one rated, universally ranked number one rated, Stephen Fulton at 122 pounds. Stopped him in the eighth round, knocked him out. Excellent performance by the monster. We both picked Fulton to win. When we previewed this fight, we just thought, it's just too big of a jump. Eventually, even great fighters hit a ceiling in their weight. And you're fighting the number one guy in that weight class. And Fulton is very, very good. Man, were we ever wrong? What'd you think about the fight?
One-sided. Didn't really expect it to be like that. But I think Fulton noticed early on just how powerful Inoue was, and it's kind of made him, very tentative to, to throw anything. And I think a lot of us probably underrated the pure boxing skill, along with the heavy hands and speed that Inoue has. And I think I was definitely one of them. I thought that Fulton would be too skillful for him. I thought he would, stick and move and just be on his bike and kind of leave Inoue twisted and turning, but yeah, it was really just a very one-sided kind of beatdown, unfortunately, for a very good fighter in Stephen Fulton. Very similar, I guess, to the Errol Spence Terence Crawford fight, which we're going to speak about soon. Fulton still is one of the best fighters at 122, but Inoue, the monster, is just on another level. And it looks like we're going to see more fights at 122. I think he's going to try to become undisputed by the looks of it at 122, and it's... I know we posted about it on Twitter and everyone keeps talking about it. Are we going to see a Manny Pacquiao type run in the weight division? Because, physically, they're the same height. I think it's 5'5", and I believe they also have the very same reach. Obviously, Inoue is kind of starting this a little bit later in his career in terms of age, but I could see him go up to at least, 130, 135 maybe, winning multiple world titles at multiple weight divisions.
I think that the whole Manny Pacquiao comparison is very, very reasonable. Everybody compares fighters to fighters and eras to eras. It happens. Whether people like it or not, it happens. And you're right. There was some, especially the people who responded to that tweet that we put out, they were saying, Pacquiao actually started way earlier. He was going through the weight classes in his early 20s. The monster's already 30 years old. It's a little late. He's not going to get... he won't hit the same amount of weight classes. So he's been at 108, 112, 115, 118 and now 122. That's five divisions so far, and he's 30 years old. It's possible that he can get to 130, like you said, maybe even 135. Either way, even if he doesn't touch the Manny Pacquiao record of eight divisions, even if he stopped at 122, which I don't think he will, I think he goes to at least 126. Probably, you know what, I'll say 130 by the time he retires. He's still impressive, ridiculously impressive, and one of the best fighters, if not the best fighter of the last decade or so. He was, you know, and we, like I said, we both picked against him. We both picked Fulton. I said that Fulton was just, he's the number one guy at that division, unified champion at 122 pounds. And in a way, in his first fight, in his first debut fight at a new weight class, going up in weight, you fight the number one guy. The number one guy in that weight class. And you stop him impressively. It wasn't even like, you know, like, hey, it was a majority decision. Either way, that still would have been very impressive. He knocked him out. He stopped him in his debut at 122 pounds. You know, I think we could still stay reasonable in terms of eventually, if he keeps going up and up and up, especially if he goes, if he wants to become undisputed in his next fight, which he said he does, the Filipino fighter who holds the other two titles, Marlon Topales or something like that?
Topales, yeah.
I think he's promoted by Manny Pacquiao. I think he's a Manny Pacquiao fighter, and because Sean Gibbons was there in the ring as well. They posed together.
You never bet against a Sean Gibbons fighter, Daniel. Yeah. We know this.
Sean Gibbons, yeah. They Pacquiao and his team, they find some really good fighters. They find some really good fighters. So, I mean, and you know, and not a lot of people know, even though he's unified champ, Marlon Topales is not, obviously doesn't have the global stage or hasn't had the global stage that the Monster has. So, you know, maybe we might see some fireworks there, but, you know, I don't think even if that fight does happen, which I'm sure it is going to happen in Japan, I think I've learned not to pick against him anymore. I don't think I can. After doing that in that fashion against somebody like Stephen Fulton, a unified champion, I can't pick against him anymore. I just can't.
Two of probably the best nicknames. It would be the Monster against the Nightmare.
Is that Marlon's nickname?
The Nightmare. That,
wow, what a marketing dream that would be. Mm. What a marketing dream that would be. Man, if that fight happened in the United States, marketing departments would be all over that. That'd be awesome.
Good transition to something I wanted to bring up by you saying that. I was listening to, I can't remember which podcast it was, but
you listen to other podcasts besides ours?
Just to see what we're competing against.
Oh, come
on. Just to see what we're competing against. do you think he'll stay in Japan? Because it looks like in terms of selling out stadiums, the viewership he can get out of there, people are saying that we might not see him too much over here. Like, you know, like, why does he have to come here? But, you know, the old-fashioned way of looking at it, right? Even for, like, me being European, being a British fan, it was always, like, to really kind of compete and to kind of conquer boxing, you need to come to the US. You need to come to the US. There's 350 million people here. The pay-per-view numbers are here. So I'm hoping we do see him back on the US, but I don't know. With, you know, these last couple of fights have been in Japan, I'm sure the numbers he does out there are probably amazing. And I'm sure the, not just Japan, I'm sure Asia are all taken by him.
Exactly. I think it's going to be hard to compete with Japan because he is a rock star over there right now. He has been for a while. He's the man over there. He's the man. And the money over there is good. The money over there is good. The TV viewership, Japan loves their boxing too. So I think you're right. I think it's going to be difficult for the United States to see him in person unless he fights another significant name. You know, whether he stays at 122 or goes to 126, 130, and it's a big fight that also attracts an American audience over here in the United States. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to leave Japan And not only that, of facing another big name across from him in the United States, but they would have to compete with the purse and the money he would make in Japan, which is very, very big. It's, you know, it's huge for him. So, you know, if they're going to put Inoue against somebody in the United States that's not a huge name, but, you know, might be competitive and, you know, could produce a decent fight, they're going to have to pay him, you know, a pretty hefty sum, or at least get close to it. I'm assuming, who knows? We're just, you know, going off of boxing history and fighter history and, you know, the last 15 years or so of fighter pay and all that. But you would think that promoters like Top Rank who co-promotes him would have to come close to what he's been making in Japan and all that. Because you're right. I think he stays in Japan. That's his bread and butter. He sells out stadiums or he sells out big arenas over there. So, and if he becomes undisputed, he has a rocket ship on his back right now. He has a rocket ship on his back, and he's a star. He's a star. Like, I do wonder, and maybe some of our listeners in Japan or anywhere else in Asia over there maybe could let us know on Twitter or email or something, that, you know, I wonder if he's like on mainstream TV out there doing interviews, or I'm sure he is doing interviews, but if he's like, you know, one of those like crossover stars over there, because he's obviously he's famous, but I wonder if he's crossed over where he's, you know, you become essentially a Canelo Alvarez, an Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, a Manny Pacquiao. You know, has he crossed over in Japan to have that type of platform? I'm interested to know that, which he might be, because, you know, he packs those arenas and they turn out for him. They turn out for him, and he always puts out a performance. And for Stephen Fulton, you got to give him a ton of credit. The absolute credit that you can give any fighter. He wanted this fight. You know, he's a Showtime fighter. He's a PBC fighter. He's advised by Al Haymon. And, you know, we know boxing politics, how it, you know, how it's affected a lot of fights and, you know, a lot of the history throughout the last 10 years or so, 10 plus years. Stephen Fulton made the trip to Japan and fought, in a way, in Japan, you know, for and put up his titles, even though he came up on the losing end and, you know, in knockout fashion. You got to give him absolute credit, man. Absolute credit, because he went over there, and I'm sure he got probably the biggest payday of his life so far. You know, and he dared to be great. He dared to be great, you know, and the monster was just greater, which he has been proving for 25 professional fights, because he's undefeated. So, you know, and like I said, he put him away in the eighth round at 1 minute and 14 seconds of the eighth round. You know, it was, I think he was down twice, or he was down once before the actual stoppage, I believe. So he was down once, and then the second time the fight was stopped. So yeah, the monster's most likely going to, I don't see why he wouldn't try to unify to become undisputed in his next fight. I don't know if it'll be by the end of the year, maybe in first quarter of next year. And Fulton, you know, Fulton's still going to be around. I'm sure he's going to come back and fight over here on Showtime somewhere, maybe in a co-main event of a significant card in the next 6 or 7 months. I don't know. Maybe Fulton. You think Fulton moves up to 126, or you think he tries to stay at 122 and just stays over here in the United States for a while?
Good question. You know, if I was him, I would, you know, take your time, see what's going to happen with Inoue, because, you know, if Inoue just fights Marlon Tapales, and then he's pretty much conquered that division, right? You know, he'd probably move up to 126. So, if you were him, you're like, you know what, I'll wait around, kind of see what Inoue does, because the belts might become vacant again, and then before you know it, boom, he's back in, picks up another belt, you know, go again, you know, have another chance at becoming undisputed. But I suppose it just depends on, you know, Fulton. He's, 29, I think, now. You know, how easy is he? Has he been making that, you know, that weight division? Because he does seem kind of tall for that weight division. So maybe, you know, moving up might give him, you know, a little bit more space, a little bit more time, you know, to a bit easier to make weight, not draining himself as much. may help his chin or something like that, you know, down the line. So I suppose it just depends, you know, how he feels, but he's still an unbelievable fighter.
Absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. Both guys are unbelievable fighters. They're both excellent fighters, regardless of who came out on the winning end and the losing end. They're both excellent fighters. I want to save the mythical pound for pound discussion until after we talk about Spence Crawford, and then we'll compare, since that's been a debate throughout the last couple of days, about who's number one, who's number two, who's one. We're going to save that for a few minutes. In the co-main event in this Japanese card in Japan on ESPN Plus, Robeezy Ramirez gets the 13th win of his career with the fifth round TKO over Satoshi Shimizu. This was for the WBO Featherweight Championship of the World. You know, we talk about the monster moving up, you know, to 126 after defeating the number one guy at 122. Robeezy Ramirez, there's a 126 fight. You know, Robeezy Ramirez versus the monster in the future, in the next year or so at 126. You never know. What do you think about Ramirez's win?
Easy work, really. I wouldn't be surprised to see Shimizu retire after this. 37 years old. He was a, 2012 bronze medalist. So, you know, he's been around for quite some time. Ramirez couldn't really miss. Looked like he just had a heat-seeking missile on that backhand. Just kind of like beat him down. And it was, very one-sided, kind of an easy victory, really, for Robeezy. And, he's just getting better and better since turning pro, obviously losing his pro debut. And then going to like Ismael Salas, and he's just gone from strength to strength now. Probably one of the best fighters to watch in the featherweight division. And if Inoue moves up, be a flipping great fight between those two.
You never know. Maybe that's why they put him as a co-main, maybe in the next year or so. I don't know. What are the chances that if Inoue unifies and becomes undisputed in his next fight, he wins, comes undisputed, especially by knockout fashion, does he move up again to 126?
I would if I was him, because you become undisputed, then you kind of conquered that division. What's left? I would say, unfortunately, for a lot of the lighter fighters, the money goes up, the weight divisions you go up, right? So, and then obviously it's an easy fight for them to make. Ramirez, Inoue, both on top rank, and we see it all the time. You know, somebody that's going to fight, the main event is on the undercard. The fans can then see who Robeezy is. He's familiar to them. They watch Robeezy Ramirez get the knockout victory, sells himself to the Japanese fans. And then, like you just said, later down the line, he comes back, fights Inoue as, probably the main event on a Japanese show, because he's already familiar. He's already been sold to those fans.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we see it all the time and in cards all over the world. So, you put one guy in the co-main and the main event, and eventually they're going to fight each other in the near future. So it could happen. It could happen. If Inoue becomes undisputed, which probably is soon, don't be surprised if in the next year or so you see that. Ramirez versus the monster at 126, which is crazy to say, but Inoue is daring to be great. So we will see. Moving on, this past Friday, the 28th of July, from the Palms Casino Resort in Las Vegas, Nevada, once again on ESPN Plus, Sanisa Estrada remains undefeated at 25-0 with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Leonela Paula Yudica, who takes the second loss of her career. This was for Estrada's WBA and WBC minimum weight titles. Estrada won by scores of 97-93 on all three scorecards. What'd you think about Estrada's win?
I thought it was a decent fight back and forth. You kind of knew early on that it was probably going to go the full 10, because, I really enjoy watching Sanisha, but she doesn't really have too much power. I thought it was actually quite a close fight. I thought that Yudica was kind of absorbing, Sanisha's punches, and then she'd come back with some really big hooks. And if she had a little bit more power, there was times when she hit Estrada full on, like on the cheek or on the side of the face. And, you know, it could have been lights out, you know, if she had a little bit more power behind her. But good win for Estrada. I thought afterwards, you know, she's in the ring and is it Yoko Valle? Is that how you pronounce it? She came in.
The
Golden Boy fighter. And
was she there in person? I think she was there, right?
Yeah, she was there in person. She got into the ring with her belts. Looks like they're trying to do, you know, is it Undisputed or a Unified between those two? I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, just Estrada kind of be like, hey, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to beat your coach and I'm going to beat Golden Boy. I was like, wow, okay. You know, that was
kind of. And then if you, I don't know if you noticed her, or maybe your listeners didn't notice, Golden Boy tweeted about it. I think they put like a photo or a picture of Yoko Valle with a quote that she said regarding Senisa Estrada. And then I think whoever tweeted it out of the Golden Boy handle, they also said like, oh, at least our fighter keeps her word or something like that.
Valle said something on the lines of, like, you sell out theaters, I sell out stadiums.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in is it Costa Rica or
Puerto Rico, I think.
Was it Puerto Rico? You know, I thought it was interesting that Golden Boy has kind of tweeted that out. I mean, I get it. You know, you're going to capitalize it. But then, you know, I wonder, are we reading too much into it by them saying like, oh, at least our fighter keeps her word or something? You know, was there reading between the lines in that? You know, something they're trying to, a little jab at Estrada, maybe because of the separation of, in their relationship or something, you know? I don't know. I mean, you got to give it to Estrada. You know, she's confident. She's confident, and she always shows that her skills are levels above every opponent. I mean, she hasn't really been in. I mean, I know this fight was like closer than people think, even though she did win. There were some moments. Am I wrong to say that some people even thought that she lost?
You know, yeah, true. On Twitter, there was a couple of people who said that, and then I think even one of the people on commentary was. Because you could see when they read the scores out, Utica looked surprised, kind of just stood there like in amazement, like, really? Like 97, 93? Like, so, you know, it was a little bit of home cooking, right? You know, at times, you know, she was the headlining event, unfortunately. She's kind of like the bigger name. I'm sure they're trying to, you know, create some bigger fights, you know, later down the line. Interesting, though, that they let Valle get into the ring, right, on a Top Rank show.
I think them doing that, Top Rank doing that, I think they know. There's no way that Bob Arum or the Top Rank team haven't talked to De La Hoya and Golden Boy, Eric Gomez and all them over there about this. Because I feel like the relationship between Top Rank and Golden Boy is, you know, it's professional. And, you know, they if there's something there, they can easily work together as compared to other promoters who can't really work together, PBC. You know, Matchroom and all that. So I think that I think I see that fight next. It just depends on like where she goes, you know, where the fight takes place pretty much. You know, is it going to take place in LA? I don't think that's a Vegas fight, even though Top Rank might want it at the Vegas fight, maybe at the Palms Casino again. But I think it's an LA fight, but are they going to be able to sell out? Yeah, maybe the StubHub, or
with those two headlining.
Yeah,
no, they didn't even sell out the Palms. There was free tickets for it.
I know, but if Valle and Estrada fight, if they fight it like in Carson at the War Grounds,
I think
Carson, California.
I would. I mean, if I was the promoter, that would be like a co-main to a bigger fight. I don't think that would sell out. I don't even know. It maybe sell out Fantasy Springs.
Well, because you also got to think about it. She, you know, Yoko Valle said that, oh, I sell out stadiums. You sell out theaters. Yeah, which is great. You know, in her country, people come out to see her. They come out to see her, but is the money going to be the same? You know, right. Is the money going to be the same over there as it is over here? Which I think it's an easy answer. It's not. So you know, the money's going to be higher if you come into a theater or a smaller venue in the United States. California, you know, Texas, Vegas. I think if they find the United States, they should find California in terms of fan bases. That's what I think. But I mean, what's the percentage chance that this fight takes place in the States as compared to, are you sure? I don't think it's Puerto Rico. I think it's, is it Costa Rica?
Maybe you could be right. You could be right.
Maybe we're both wrong. I feel like we're both wrong. But what do you think it takes place? What do you think is the percentage chance for each?
I think in the US, because you don't really see, depending on who obviously decides to promote it or whether it's a co-promotion, Golden Boy and Top Rank don't really promote outside of the US.
Yeah, except for the Monster, you know, Top Rank. Yeah. But they're, that's like a co-promotion too, so they're kind of not really like all in. But like, yeah, you're right. They don't really go out. I mean, Golden Boy will promote here and in Mexico, but, you know, it's close enough.
Right.
But you're right. Like, they stay, you know, I mean, they're U.S.-based companies. It makes sense.
The only one I can see dude outside would be if they loaned via to Mav Nation. Mav Nation are the only one that really do fights at Puerto Rico or Costa Rica. Obviously, I can't remember which one it is.
Right. But
they're the only company I know that do fights there.
Right, right. No, I mean, maybe, but I don't think Golden Boy or Top Rank would, for a fight like that, I think they'd be involved. But who knows? Who knows? Either way, I think this fight happens. One last question on this. Does it happen before the end of the year or does it happen next year?
It's what, August? It could. 4 months? It really could. Yeah, it's not too long. I don't see... Estrada took a few shots, but nothing... She wasn't really cut or... No, beaten down or anything like that. I think they could do it. Vaya as well hasn't had a super, super busy year.
Right.
But I could see them getting it done. I suppose it just depends, you know, how much do they want it? It's not like it's a blockbuster fight where Top Rank, you know, really need to, you know, strike while the iron's hot or anything like that, unfortunately. But it could. I think they have enough time. If not, it'll be the start of the year, you know, January, February, something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, we will see as the months and days proceed forward. And now, one of the most anticipated fights, I think, in history of the sport of boxing. This past Saturday, the 29th of July, from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, a Showtime pay-per-view. Terrence Crawford gets the 40th win of his career and remains undefeated with a 9th-round stoppage over Errol Spence Jr., who takes the first professional loss of his career. Terrence Crawford is now the undisputed welterweight champion of the world. All right. I was wrong. I picked Spence. But I picked Spence because I felt like we shouldn't sit on the fence, you know, for these picks. In general, you shouldn't sit on the fence, but I edged it to Spence, even though I still felt it was like 50-50, you know, 49-51. Like, it was I still picked Spence just because of Spence's resume, and I felt he fought the higher caliber of opponents regardless. But boy, was I wrong. There was levels to the difference between Crawford and Spence. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I picked Crawford, but I didn't expect it to go as one-sided as that. I think Crawford and kind of Beaumark really summed it up well with the interviews that they did. Crawford said something along the lines of when Spence hit him with a backhand in, like, I think it was the second round, Crawford said he realized that, wow, like, he doesn't hit that hard. And that just gave him the confidence to really just get in there and walk him down. And now that Spence was in there with someone of a, you know, like an elite level, you could start to see some of the things that he kind of lacked. He wasn't that very good at going backwards, couldn't really throw going backwards. He would kind of give up his height. Every time he'd throw a jab, he'd kind of get down low, and he didn't really have much head movement. And Crawford was just seemed to be the stronger. He had the better feet. He had the faster jab. He would kind of let Spence commit, and then he would just counter, and his counters were so fast. It really was just from the second round, just a one-sided beatdown. And I thought Harvey Dock probably stopped it about the right time. Derek James could have maybe have pulled him out, but I think it was about the right time. I think it was a pretty good stoppage. He And it just seemed from early on that Crawford just couldn't miss with uppercuts and hooks. He was just kind of countering him all the time and just really beat him down. And you could tell that from Spence's face. And I don't think we really need to see a rematch at 147. I think if they're going to do it, it really needs to be at 154. But if you're Crawford, you want to try to kind of entice Charlo. But unfortunately, Charlo is obviously, you know, I think it's pretty much signed, sealed and delivered that he's fighting Canelo, even though I don't think we've seen like an official poster or anything yet. I could be wrong on that. But, you know, he's conquered the 147 division. There's not really much left for him to do. If anything, you know, move up to 154, test yourself there and at last kind of let those belts be relinquished so people like, you know, Lex and Virgil Ortiz and all these guys coming through can finally get a shot.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Crawford, because there's a two-way rematch clause here, and Spence, the loser, gets to invoke it if they want. But I think one or the other, I think it might have been Spence or somebody, I saw something in interviews that said that the weight has to be agreed upon by both parties. So Spence could invoke the rematch clause, but if Crawford doesn't want it at 154, is Spence not going to take the fight? You know, I wonder what the fine-tuned details are about that clause. You know, like, do they both have to agree on the weight, or does Spence, you know, because if you're the loser, yeah, you still have a rematch clause, but like, how much power do you actually have, you know, in terms of the weight? So I'm interested to see that. I do think that Crawford says yes to 154. I do think he says yes to 154 and he fights him at 154. It's supposed to happen by December, unless both parties agreed not to have. I don't think they're going to agree. I think Spence took a really bad beating, and I feel like they're going to convince Crawford to, hey, you know, are you okay if we postpone it until first part of next year? You know, Crawford's the older fighter. You know, they thought they were going to age him out over the last 5 years, but they obviously didn't. But yeah, that I think it happens at 154. I'd be surprised if it happens by December. But you never know. I hope it does, because supposedly that's what's in the contract. That's what they've been talking about, but we will see. But yeah, was I wrong? Was I totally wrong? You know, I'll take the L on that one. Crawford literally showed that he is levels above the guy who was, you know, unified champion of the world at 147 pounds. Spence, an Olympic medalist. Yeah. You know where I underestimated, even though I knew he has it, is Crawford's killer instinct. Oh. I took that into account, but I really underestimated it. Crawford's instinct, killer instinct, is ridiculous. I think it's easy to say, and I don't want to see arguably, I think it's easy to say that he has the most vicious killer instinct in the whole boxing game today. When he has you hurt or he sees it, he goes for it. And he knows exactly where to hit you. He has it, man. He has it. You can see how composed he was. His punches were accurate. They were effective. They were crisp. His footwork was excellent. That was a complete performance by him. That was a complete performance against somebody, the elite of the elite in Errol Spence Jr. in that weight class. Not even that weight class, pound for pound. You know, that was a complete performance by Crawford. The most complete performance he's ever had in his professional career. On the biggest stage he's ever had. You can tell that not only did he have that killer instinct that he's always had, but even based on his post-fight interview, there was anger and frustration behind those punches. Because like he said, like he told Jim Gray in the Showtime post-fight interview, and, you know, I'm summarizing it, but he said, you know, they tried to box me out for 5 years. They try to keep me on the other side. You know, they try to keep them on the outside, saying I'm not good enough. I can't beat them. I can't beat these guys. You can tell him saying that. And he said it before over the years. He he took that and he channeled it. He channeled it and he took Spence to school, man. He made Spence look like an amateur, you know. Spence, you could tell Spence felt that first knockdown, even though it was like a flash knockdown. I thought, oh, wow, that was it. You know, what a knockdown. Spence never went down, but, and it was a kind of like a flash knockdown. I was like, oh, wow, sweet. You know, like that was a good, those were good. That was a good combination to get him off. It was like a quick jab, like 1-2 punch combo. But then after that, I think Crawford knew like, oh, okay, I got him. You know, now I'm not going back. What an excellent performance. I don't think I can say, you know, I can't say enough about Crawford. You know, like it's, I pick Spence. I'll take the L. I'll take the loss, man. I picked Spence. I thought Spence was going to edge it. Just like Inoue. I don't think I can ever pick against Crawford again. I just can't. And I don't even think Spence, like, you know, people, I don't want to say people, you know, some people tried to start a narrative saying, oh, Spence was overtrained. He can't make the weight anymore. Or he looked, you know, he looked weird before the fight or this and that. I mean, so far up until this point, you got to give it to Spence. He's not making any excuses. And he says like, no, I'm not going to make any excuses. The better man won tonight. You know, he beat me, you know, just, I wasn't on my game tonight. Like, you know, he hasn't made any excuses yet. We've heard that before. And then later on, these fighters make these excuses. So, you know, we'll see, but he hasn't yet. So hopefully he stays like that. And you got to give them both credit, just like Fulton and Inoue. They made the fight. They've acknowledged that they had a phone call together when negotiations were happening. They both had a phone call or two phone calls for like 30 minutes each. And they ironed out the details. Even Steven Espinoza said, I think in an interview this past weekend with Boxing News and Rob Tebbit, that, you know, about the phone calls that Crawford and Spence had directly during negotiations. And then Spence and Crawford came back to Espinoza, or Spence came back to Espinoza and told him like, oh no, give him this. He's going to get this, or he's going to get that. And Espinoza was, from his reaction, he was kind of surprised. He's like, oh my God, those are big points. Like, you could tell they didn't want to do it, but you know, they were trying to treat Brock Crawford as a B-side, you know, and in terms of ratings, TV and all that money. Yeah. Financially it was a B-side, but in terms of after Saturday night, man, I don't think he's ever going to be a B-side to anybody ever again. You know, he's, yeah, what an excellent performance, man. I can't say enough. You know, we thought, we've been waiting for this fight for like 5 years. You know, Spence and PBC have said, you know, Spence even told Crawford when they met at some fight a couple years back, there was on YouTube when, you know, somebody was backstage. Spence even told Crawford, like, he's like, why wouldn't I take the easy route and fight Sean Porter or Danny Garcia and all that? He was pretty much saying like, yeah, I'll go the easier route, fight these easier guys like Sean Porter, Keith Thurman and all those guys. He was calling them the easy road. But if you read between the lines, he's pretty much saying, yeah, you're the hard pathway. And I'm saying it to you right now. Like, Spence knew Crawford was going to be the guy. And then Crawford comes out with Eminem, like with a fish, like a fish, like net to catch fish or something. He's wearing that. It's like, man, I can't say enough about it, man. I can't say enough. Crawford. And then I think after the second knockdown, Crawford points to Charlo. I think the 154 Charlo. I think it's Jermell, who was in the crowd ringside. Crawford points to him and says, yeah, you're next. He's like, he points at him while he's in the fight, the spotlight of his life against the elite of the elite in Spence, who's getting up from a knockdown. He turns around and looks at the guy who's unified, or to some people undisputed, at 154 pounds in the weight class above, and he points at him and he says, you're next. If you can't tell me that guy Crawford didn't have the highest confidence that a human being could have, I don't know what else to tell you. Crawford was just, he had frustration and anger in his whole body from being boxed out for all these years on different sides of the streets, politics. He had that and he unleashed, man. He unleashed. And in terms of pound for pound, I know Crawford Spence or Spence Crawford was the bigger fight in the U.S. and globally, you know, more mainstream attention and all that. I get it. I get it. But trying to be as objective as I can and just looking at the fights and the details surrounding the fights in terms of Spence Crawford and Inoue and Fulton. And you tell me if you agree or not. You might not agree. I still have Inoue at number one in our in my pound for pound. Mythical, but in my pound for pound, I'm going to give the edge to Inoue. And maybe you want to call it 1A and 1B. 1A Inoue, 1B Crawford. I'm giving it to Inoue because, and this is why, because Crawford's been at 147. You know, I'm trying not to stay on the fence here. Crawford's been at 147 for quite a few years now. He grew into that weight. Spence, you know, it might have been different. Who knows? A couple of years ago when he first got into the weight class, who knows? If Spence fought him earlier, who knows? But Crawford's been at 147 for quite a few years now. Inoue went up to the next weight class and fought the number one guy. It's like Crawford moving up from 140 straight to 147 and fighting Spence. Inoue did that with Fulton. And I know the fight was in Japan. It didn't have the marketability. It wasn't as big in the U.S. and stuff. But as trying to be as objective as possible in terms of the actual fights and the details surrounding the fight, I'm still keeping Inoue by a hair at the number one spot on pound for pound. And Crawford, whether you want to put him at 1B or number two, he's right below him. But I can't really get mad at people saying that Crawford's number one. But just if you ask me, I think Inoue edges him just because that was his debut against the number one guy at 122 pounds and he knocked him out. What do you think?
Yeah, it's the pound for pound list is just so hard to do.
It is.
Because obviously, you know, they're all different divisions with, you know, different people to face and some are stronger than others. So it's like, okay, like, is that division as strong as 147? So like, is he beating people of the same caliber? You know, because to me, it's, you know, you've got to look at what Inoue, Crawford, Canelo still.
Right.
And even Usyk, you know, what Usyk's done, you know, just putting on that much weight to go up to heavyweight and beating literal giants is an unbelievable task. So it's super hard to choose. You know, Usyk's kind of been pushed down because you've got that, like, most recency bias, right? You know, everybody now who's talking about it, they're picking Inoue or Crawford because they literally...
Oh, yeah, it's a good point. Recency bias, like, that's an excellent point because that happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one that's on the brain, right? You know, and then next time when Canelo fights, when he comes out, if he beats Charlo, everyone's going to be like, okay, well, Canelo's the best in the world. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go wrong with saying you're looking at it, you know, Crawford's probably 1A, you know, Inoue is, you know, 1A as well, or 1B, however you want to look at it, because they're both unbelievable. You know, what Inoue is doing is unbelievable, just moving up there, beating people like Fulton, unifying divisions, becoming undisputed divisions. And then, you know, what Crawford did was unbelievable. You know, I'd said for a while we'd always believed how good that he was, but for me, regular listeners to the show, I always say I'm a resume guy. And he needed somebody because those wins over Kell Brook and Khan, good. 5 years from now, we'll all look at it and be like, oh my God, he beat Kell Brook, he beat Khan. But we know that both of those were at the end of the career, right? You know, they were literally pretty much one fight away from retiring. But he went out there and he beat Errol Spence in his prime, taking nothing away from Spence, whether it was the weight, whether it's those recent car crashes and stuff like that. We're giving all respect to Crawford. He came in and he beat Errol Spence in his prime. So, yeah, for me, I think they're super close. Can't really pick between them. I wouldn't say you're wrong having Inoue top, and I wouldn't say you're wrong having Crawford top. It's just that goddamn close, and it's boxing's dead, right?
Yeah, I guess. Saying, yeah.
Boxing's on its last legs. Look at the week we've just had.
Exactly. Exactly. So I said this is a, you know, people need to realize what they went through. Fans, boxing fans especially, that was a week. That was a week of events in terms of legacy fights and all that for each of them, for all four of them. Credit to all four of them. Fulton, Inoue, Spence, Crawford. That was a week in history in the sport. But yeah, like I said, just because I'm trying to, because I was thinking about the last couple days or so before recording this episode, and I was like, you know, it's easy to, you know, what if Inoue fought on Saturday and Crawford fought on Tuesday? And Inoue, like you said, recency bias. And Inoue knocks out Fulton on Saturday. You know, Crawford Spence happens on Friday. Inoue Fulton happens on Sunday or Saturday. You know, like you said, it, people, whatever they remember the most recently, I guess. And I tipped it just a hair to Inoue at being number one because it was his debut in a new weight class going up at 122 pounds, fighting the number one guy, the universally ranked number one guy at that weight class at 122 pounds. Yeah, I know 122, 118, one, you know, 115, 112, you know, I know all those lower weight classes aren't as valuable financially and marketable and stuff. I mean, we get it. That's just how boxing has been for a long time. The higher weight classes from like 135 and up have always been the glamour divisions. But, you know, as trying to be as objective as you can, Inoue has, you know, been knocking everybody out. Knocking everybody out. And then knocks out the number one guy going up 4 pounds in his fifth weight class or something like that. Yeah, that's nuts, man. That's nuts. And Crawford, like I said, whether it happens at 154, 147 again, I think Crawford beats him again. I think just Spence just doesn't have the, you know, and people say like, you know, this is when you come back and you say styles make fights. And sometimes, you know, the other fighter's style just isn't made for the other guy. Like Porter, people might say, oh, Porter put up a better fight against Crawford. There was that video of Crawford in like the 10th round or something against Porter where he's looking across the ring to somebody saying, he's up, talking about Porter, like, oh, he's up on the cards? And he's up on the cards? He's like, what? How is he up on the cards? And then when he comes out for like the 11th, within like the first 30 seconds of the round, he gets a knockdown. And then he ends up getting like in the next, I don't know if it's after in that round or in the 12th or something, he ends up getting the stoppage and he beats Porter. So, you know, people can say like, oh yeah, Porter gave him a way better fight than Spence and Spence beat Porter. You know,
that was close though.
Porter Crawford?
Porter Spence.
Oh yeah, yeah. Porter Spence was, Porter gives anybody a tough time. That's why even when the Crawford fight was made, I knew it was going to be tough. Like up until the point when Porter got knocked down and then eventually got stopped, Porter was giving him a fight. He's got one of those styles. It doesn't matter who he fights. His style always overwhelms you, and you have to just go in it. You have to just go into him.
Instead of Showtime, it should be Sean Car Crash Porter.
Seriously, yeah, because Porter.
That's how you come out looking. Yeah, he's just. Yeah, all action.
He blows you up, man. He blows you up. It's nuts. It's nuts. But yeah, I just think that, you know, Crawford's all wrong for Spence, you know, and it just didn't work. It just didn't work, you know. So I think Crawford just has his number. Crawford had a lot of built up aggression from being boxed out, you know. He didn't thank anybody. I mean, thank God at the end and stuff, but he didn't thank any promoter. He didn't thank anybody else. You know, I'm sure he thanked people behind the scenes, but yeah, Crawford, you can tell he had aggression and he was on a mission, man. He was on a mission. And yeah, whether it happens 147, 154, Crawford beats him again. I'm learning my lesson this time. Crawford beats him again.
And something we didn't raise, he fought the whole fight southpaw.
Did he? Oh, you're right. I overlooked that. Man, what a switch. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Yeah, he's, you got to talk about killer instinct. Crawford's a guy, man. Him and Inoue, like I said, 1A, 1B. Like, those guys are the guys in boxing. Those are the men, I guess, if you want to say, the fighters right now.
The only thing he lacks it is the media side of it, being a personality, doing interviews.
But he's still making a ton of money. You know, some people don't care. They're like, hey, you know, I'm a great, excellent fighter, and I'm still making millions of dollars. Even though, like, you know, if you have the personality and stuff, like a Mayweather and all those guys, and you do a lot of media interviews, you can increase your stock and add more money to those purses. You could. That's just how it's worked. But, you know, Crawford probably never thought he was going to make millions of dollars like this. And look at him. Like, he, you know, he's happy. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm making minimum $5 million a fight or something like that. You know, you can't. Can you really complain about that? If you're like, hey, yeah, I'm reasonable. You know, I don't need to do all that stuff if I'm not comfortable doing, because I'm still making millions of dollars a fight.
He does his talking in the ring, right?
Yeah, that's what he says. So, yeah, it's crazy, man. That is crazy. No wonder they boxed him out for so long. I mean, every promoter boxes out other fighters. You know, you don't want to work with the networks and stuff. And, you know, I get it. It happens, but. One last thing on this fight before I move on. How many pay-per-views does it do? As of this recording, we said five. I said between four, in the fours and fives last week. I'm still sticking to that.
Not to put a downer on it, because the fight was unbelievable, but it wasn't trending. Even fight week, people were posting, like, people in the know, in the media, like, you know, looking at stuff that's trending on Google, the stuff that's trending on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. And as far as I know, I don't even think it sold out. It sold out in terms of Ticketmaster and all that, buying tickets and reselling them. But some of those resale tickets didn't sell. From what
that was pretty expensive.
From people in the know, I think it still did something similar. And I'm sure we'll hear some astronomical number, which isn't true. But I still think it did 400,000 or 500,000. And I judge it off. I had one person text me from work asking about the fight.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah. No, I only had boxing fans, and, you know, we're not trying to talk bad about it. It's just what happened from our perspective. But, you know, all the people who asked me about it were already boxing fans. They knew a little bit more, like, you know, they know about the sport. So I was like, oh yeah, I expect you to know about it. But Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis was the one that people have asked me about the whole all year so far. That was a fight people asked me about. Regular sports fans, that was a fight people, that one crossed over big time. I don't think nobody's going to touch that one.
I had one person text me from work about Crawford Spence. I had four people text me about the UFC.
Yeah, I get it. You know, but we'll see. Either way, excellent week of fights with that. In the co-main event, Alexandre Santiago got the 12-round unanimous decision win over the Filipino Flash, Nonito Donaire. This was for the vacant WBC bantamweight title. Santiago won by scores of 116, 112 twice, and 115, 113. Donaire gave a good account of himself, but, you know, like we talked about last week, what does he have left? He might still have something left, but, you know, I think he's, I don't know if he said it in interviews or not. I could be mistaken. I haven't heard anything, but he could be seriously considering hanging him up. What do you think?
I thought the scorecard should have been wider. I think he got a couple of rounds because of the fact he's Nonito Donaire. I thought Father Time looks like he's catching up with him a little bit. And I think he's still training himself, right? And I'm not the biggest fan of that. You can't necessarily see some of the things that are your weaknesses and stuff that's lacking. And you need sort of like an outside eye, you know, somebody that's going to be there, you know, strict enough and, you know, brave enough to tell you where you're going wrong. You know, someone that's not going to be overawed by, hey, I'm training, you know, Nonito Donaire, somebody that's just like, hey, you need to knuckle down, you need to do this, and, you know, get it done. So, you know, I'm not a fan of him kind of going through the motions and training himself, even though, you know, it has worked in, you know, recent fights. You know, I think last week, you know, I was trying to say I'd hope that he would win and, you know, he'd pick up a world title and he'd take his
belt
off and kind of like ride off into the sunset, you know, a real storybook ending essentially for him, because obviously the fight was in Las Vegas. You know, he lives and trains in Las Vegas, but, you know, unfortunately that's not how the fight business works, right? You know, quite often people kind of go out, you know, on their shield because they kind of go on, you know, one fight too long. But listening to the interviews with him afterwards, it looks like he seems to think he's quite a way away from retiring. So I think we'll see him again.
Yeah. I think he misses it. You know, he's a fighter, man. Either way, he's etched himself into the legacy of the sport of boxing. So he's done quite good for himself. Also on the card, Isaac Cruz, or some of you call him Isaac Cruz, 25-2-1, gets a split decision over Giovanni Cabrera. Cruz won by scores of 114, 113, 115, 112. And then Cabrera got the score of 113, 114. This was a tough fight. A tough fight for Cruz. He really had to go down and dig deep. What'd you think?
Super close fight. There was even people saying they thought Cabrera wouldn't. Cabrera had maybe, you know,
Cruz wants that Davis fight. I mean, I get it. It's a money fight.
See, to me, pardon me, it looked like they picked him a good opponent in terms of Cabrera, feather-fisted, essentially, you know, very, very low knockouts. It looked like somebody that he could essentially walk down and knock out and get a very good knockout in front of the fans so they could run it back and have an in-house Javonte Davis against Cabrera. No, sorry, Javonte Davis against Isaac Cruz, part two. You know, in-house.
Oh, fight. Yeah, that will happen. That will happen.
Yeah, but I think they probably just wanted Pitbull to get in there and really put on a show and knock him out. And, you know, we didn't get that. Cabrera really stuck to the game plan that he should have done. Throw out your stick, boom, boom, keep jabbing him, keep moving. You know, that's the only way that he was going to win. You don't want to get in close with somebody that's, you know, bigger and stronger than you. And that's, you know, that's essentially what he did. And Cruz looked a little bit lost at times. And I think he came out with a victory because it could have gone either way.
And then moving on to this weekend, this upcoming Saturday, fight previews, the 5th of August from the American Airlines Arena in Dallas, Texas, on DAZN pay-per-view. Jake Paul returns 6-1 against Nate Diaz, former UFC champ Nate Diaz, who makes his pro boxing debut. I don't know how it's been selling. The American Airlines Arena holds quite a few thousand people, maybe over 15,000, maybe more. I'm not sure. I don't know how the fight's been selling. I haven't really, you know, seen too much buzz about it. Maybe I'm wrong, because Jake Paul, you know, has an audience online that I know he probably advertises to and all that. So maybe, you know, maybe all those people buy it. Maybe all those people tune in. Could be wrong, you know, but we'll see how that goes. And then in the co-main event, Amanda Serrano, who's promoted by Jake Paul, goes up against Heather Hardy of Brooklyn, 24-2. This is for the undisputed featherweight championship of the world. So, you know, that's not surprising. Serrano, Jake Paul, they're partnered up promotionally, or Serrano is under the promotion of Jake Paul. So that makes total sense. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Former Puerto Rican boxer Felix Verdejo, who was signed to Top Rank at one point and had a lot of hype behind him, was found guilty last week on two charges related to the death of a 27-year-old woman who was pregnant with his child. The verdict came after a 25-week trial in which the jury heard gruesome details about the April 2021 killing of the female. The jury convicted Verdejo on the charge of kidnapping that leads to a death and one count of causing the death of an unborn child. The 12 jurors could not reach a unanimous verdict. And this was in Puerto Rico. It wasn't in the United States. Well, Puerto Rico technically is U.S. territory, so I don't know how the justice system works over there. I'm not sure, but like I said, the 12 jurors could not reach a unanimous verdict on the charge of intercepting and stealing a vehicle with the consequence of causing a death, or the charge of carrying a weapon to commit a violent crime. So, horrible situation all around. Sucks for Verdejo. He had so much hype behind him, and you know. I don't even know what to say, man. That's insane. What do you think?
Yeah, unbelievable. You know, it's good that we've got, you know, justice to have been served, and, you know, all of our thoughts obviously go out to the female's family. But just imagine being on that jury service. 25 weeks.
That's insane. I thought it was a typo. 25 weeks.
Six months.
It took that long? Like, holy crap. I mean, were they meeting like one... day a week, you know, like it's one thing if they met like 5 days a week or 4 days a week for 6 months. That's a lot, but yeah, I don't know. That's something I want to dive into on my own to see how that worked, because that's insane. And then also Artur Beterbiev, the unified light heavyweight champion of the world, is set to defend against Callum Smith on August 19. But this fight has been postponed as Beterbiev deals with a bone infection in his jaw. Top Rank recently announced the infection was a result of dental work, at least according to ESPN. We don't know what's going to happen exactly with the recovery and all that. So we will see what happens. I'm sure it's going to be rescheduled to sometime next year in 2024. And then also Lee Wood will defend his WBA featherweight championship of the world against Josh Warrington in a huge domestic clash on neutral ground at the Utility Arena? Or
yeah, Utilita Arena. I'm not too sure. It must be some type of sponsor.
Utilita Arena in Sheffield on October 7th on DAZN. I think is this a rematch?
No, first time I think between these two.
Oh, is it? Oh, I don't know why I thought it was a rematch, but that should be a good fight. That should be a pretty good competitive fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously both fought Lara. You know, both fought Lara twice, in fact. So it should be interesting. I think it's a good fight for both of them. Big domestic showdown. I think, you know, Josh Warrington's probably coming to the end of his career. So kind of getting two popular fighters at a neutral ground, I'm sure that'll do good numbers in the UK. Probably not so much, you know, stateside, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's a pretty good competitive fight. I'm going to catch it when it comes out. But once again, as we go towards the finish line here on the Last Round podcast, after talking about two excellent fights, especially focusing on Terrence Crawford's win over Errol Spence Jr. to become the undisputed champion of the world at 147 pounds, and then the monster in a way, his debut at 122 pounds and becomes a unified champion with his knockout over Stephen Fulton in Japan. Great week of fights. This is an episode that we're definitely going to remember. Two fights, two excellent fighters. You know, when do you see the two top pound for pound guys in the world fight within four or five days of each other? You know, in this sport, especially with these fighters fighting one time a year, you know, twice a year, one time every, you know, 600 days. That was something special, man. That was definitely something special. But as we wind down here on the Last Round podcast, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at the Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And you guys pretty much get a weekend off. So relax, do what you want to do this weekend, but then join us next week because we'll be previewing Anthony Joshua, Dillian White, huge UK dust up, and then stateside, Emmanuel Navarrete against Oscar Valdez.
That fight crept up on us, didn't it?
August the 12th is going to be a good one. That's a full day of boxing, guys.
Better be ready. It's not any. We're having an excellent year. Excellent year. One of the best years, at least in terms of big fights. So I'm ready for that. So for once again, from my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is the Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.